Hey, it's Open Threads. It's my podcast. I'm Brian Castle. Welcome to it. Today, I'm talking to my friend Tyler King. He is the founder of LessAnnoyingCRM.com. What a name, right? Hey, before I roll today's episode, here's my real-time update on what I'm working on. I'm recording this update on March 8th, 2024. Well, if you've been following my story heading into this year, then you know I'm in a transition phase. I'm exploring some new directions to take in my business. And this month, I decided to come back to my roots and focus my energy on what I do best, and that's building new products. So I've launched what I'm calling a product studio, and I'm calling it Instrumental Products. It's where I get to partner with fellow founders, creators, and SaaS companies on taking new product ideas from concept to launched. And, you know, since I'm a full stack designer and developer, my focus now is on continuously building new software products and continuing to grow that muscle. Sometimes I'm building products with clients, sometimes with partners, and building some new products of my own to grow out my portfolio at Instrumental Products. And as always, I love to build in public on my YouTube channel and on Twitter, and, you know, share the process of taking new product ideas to life. So that's what I'm up to, building products in public. And I'm still running my SaaS product, Clarity Flow, which is doing its thing this year. All right, so that's my update. You can follow along with me on Twitter. I'm at CastJam. I'd love to hear from you if you have any feedback for anything I'm working on, especially this show on the podcast. And with that, let's get into today's show. So as you might imagine, they are a CRM software company, customer relationship management, and they are less annoying than the vast number of competitors in that super competitive space. And that's actually what I wanted to talk to Tyler about today. They've been successfully running this SaaS company for over 10 years now, multiple millions in ARR. So they have figured out a thing or two or three when it comes to growth, but it's still something that all these years in, even a company of their size and experience still struggles with this idea of growth and finding the next growth channel and even understanding where the current growth is even coming from. Like, believe it or not, like when you look at these companies that have been around and they're well established, you might be surprised to know that so many of them don't have growth completely figured out. And I mean, kind of ranting and raving and complaining about how difficult it is to do the work of marketing and to understand marketing strategy. That's one of my favorite things to complain about every day. So what better idea for a podcast episode to invite Tyler on to kind of commiserate on that stuff. I should also mention Tyler is the co-host of one of my favorite other podcasts called Startup to Last. You know, they're talking about bootstrapping behind the scenes, very similar to what I do on Bootstrapped Web with Jordan Gall. So that's another one I highly recommend. For now, let's talk to Tyler about growth. Hey, Tyler, how's it going, man?
Doing good. How are you?
Doing good. Yeah, great to connect. We were just talking offline that, like, I feel like you and I have spoken a lot in the last year or so, and this is actually the very first time we're speaking live because everything else has been asynchronous on Zip Message.
This is like a boomer conversation we're having right now where we're both actually present.
I know. Very cool. Very cool. So you're, of course, the founder of Less Annoying CRM. I mean, I think in this chat here, we'll talk a bit about marketing and growth. But one thing just right off the bat that clearly you guys have gotten really right is the branding and the name. I actually think that's got to like work wonders for you from a growth standpoint, you know, like it's like marketing, positioning, messaging right from the name itself.
Yeah, some people hate the name Less Annoying CRM. Like there are a lot of people who are like, I can't show this to my boss. Like they're going to laugh me out of the room. So it works against us sometimes, but yeah, when you're doing the whole like jobs to be done, positioning, messaging exercise, like we get to skip a step. Normally you have some name that doesn't mean much. And then in your H1, you have to explain what it actually is. And our name kind of explains it. And then that gives us a lot of freedom to be like, well, Less Annoying CRM, you got the gist. What else is there to say, you know?
Yeah. And also it's a CRM. So you're in this like hyper competitive
space.
Maybe one of the most competitive spaces for right. SaaS.
Yeah, the original SaaS.
I feel like having a name like that, I mean, it's also like a conversation starter. So it like gets you into the conversation, right? Like if you're looking at literally like a list of 50 CRMs, the name Less Annoying CRM stands out just from its uniqueness, you know?
Yeah, when we've done customer interviews, like a bunch of people have said like, okay, first I looked at Salesforce, then I looked at HubSpot, then I looked at Pipedrive, and I was pulling my hair out and I was on CRM number 12. I scrolled through this huge list and we're like number, you know, 87 on the list or whatever. And they're like, I saw your name and I had to click. I think a lot of companies don't like, they don't brand themselves acknowledging the reality that they're like a really, really tiny fish. They like try to do this like Slack or Stripe type of branding where it's just, it means nothing and everyone knows who you are. And like, yeah, I don't know. That's hard.
Well, you know, in this chat, I thought we would talk about growth and marketing in general. And maybe both of us would just sort of complain about how hard it is.
Yeah.
One of my favorite things to complain about. But like, you guys have been around a while and you've figured out a thing or two, you know, you're at like several million ARR. I do want to point folks to your Mixergy interview that you did a few months back. I thought that was really great. And, you know, you get like the whole backstory. So we won't do all that here. But
sure.
But what I am curious about, like before we get to like the present day and how we think about marketing and growth here in 2022, I mean, maybe give us a quick, like, what year did Less Annoying actually start? And what were some of the early wins or like key milestones, like first customers and then the next 100 customers and then, you know, from there?
Yeah. So we started in 2009 and we didn't really have an official launch, but we kind of retroactively said it was January 1st, 2010 is around when the product was in a state where someone could actually sign up and use it. So we're going on almost 13 years now. Yeah, the world was very different back then. Like there was Salesforce and there was Basecamp, and I probably like the term SaaS barely existed at the time. So in the early days, I think we were basically like, whereas the game now is there's all this competition and you have to stand out. In the early days, it was trying to convince people like, oh no, you can buy software online. Like you don't have to, it's like secure enough. So that was kind of the challenge we were facing.
Like let alone time, subscription software, just putting your right. credit card for anything on the internet was like.
Yeah, exactly. Like our homepage, I was actually just looking back at some of our old homepage mockups and they were like, they had this whole justification for monthly fees instead of one-time payments and stuff like that. And all that has changed. But yeah, in terms of like early wins and stuff, it took us a few months to get our first customer. And really, these were people who, the product was so bad, no one would ever buy it in today's world. It was just that there was not much else out there at the time. We only really have ever had one big marketing win. And that was, do you remember the Chrome Web Store back in the day? Like not the current version of it, but when it launched?
I don't remember when it launched, no.
So like nowadays, the Chrome Web Store... Yeah. Like you use it or you have a Chrome extension. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I use Chrome and extensions all the time. I just don't remember when they started. Yeah.
Well, so that's what it is today. What it used to be was like Google was doing this anti iOS play of like, let's make a directory of all web apps, basically. And so instead of installing native apps, let's use web apps. It wasn't about extensions at the time. And that came out, you know, a year or two after we started, and I got listed on there the first day. I was like, sure, let's be on there. And we just got a ton of free traffic from that. It's basically that and Google AdWords was kind of our early growth.
Yeah, it seems like a lot of these bootstrapped SaaS that really had success in you know, starting from around 10 years ago, that's when like Google, that was like the heyday of Google AdSense, right? Like, or AdWords.
AdWords, yeah, it was great. At the time, I thought it was very expensive. And now looking back on it, man, I would give anything to go back to those days.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So, I mean, I see how that can give you like the first launch and turn nothing into something, right? But then what did it look like, let's say like 5 years ago, right? Like you must have still found some things that were working.
I don't necessarily know what they are. I'm spiraling where I keep kind of thinking one thing and then thinking another. And where I currently am is thinking a lot of stuff we've done has worked. It just, no one thing has worked well enough that any of them stood out. You know, we placed a lot of small bets, but we've got directory listings on like G2 and Capterra and websites like that. We suck at SEO, but after 13 years, you can't help but have some organic search traffic coming in. We advertise with probably like 10 different random little sites where we're paying.
I wonder if you get any search traffic for people just typing in and not knowing your brand name or anything. And they're just typing in like like less annoying CRM. Is there one of those?
I've heard one person tell me that that happened before. So at least once that has happened. And they were like, no way is there a company named this.
Great. I mean, even Google is like smart enough now to know, like, if you type like less frustrating CRM, like they would like associate that with you probably.
Yeah. The game I used to play, because we existed before Google did the like autocomplete while you were typing thing. And as soon as they launched that, I was like, how many letters of less annoying CRM, because it's a long name, how many letters do I have to type before it guesses it? It wasn't until you got to the CRM. And then gradually, like, at one point I typed like L-E-S-S space A, and it filled in less annoying CRM. And I was like, we made it. We've done it.
Very cool. Very cool. I'm also curious about, so you're sort of like me in that, like, you're like a product first, right? Would you say? Like,
yeah. Formally educated in computer science, but like, kind of half design, half programming, really.
Cool. Yeah, I'm sort of the same, except started as a designer and sort of hacked together some backend skills later on, but very much a product person. And I always felt like I've figured a thing or two out with, or I've been lucky with marketing, I would say, in the last 10 plus years, but I've never felt like it was a strong side of the tool belt for me.
That's funny, because you ran a basically marketing agency, right?
And like, I ran a content marketing agency, and like, we're doing a bit of content and SEO stuff with ZipMessage. And it's like, we actually have a strategy. And it's like, we didn't even like do, like the things that we're doing now in ZipMessage are not even things that we were doing in audience ops. Like, and you know, actually on that note, what was interesting, it was part of this frustration with me when I was doing sales calls for audience ops over the years, it transitioned, like in the very early years, it was like, we will sell you content marketing because content marketing will work to get you customers. And that's the right strategy, right? But it sort of very quickly shifted toward like, we don't know what's going to work. If you're convinced that you need content done, then we are a production shop that we will produce content for you. And we're very efficient at that. But we're not here to do the strategy or get you customers, quote unquote. We're just here to write the articles that you believe will get you customers.
Yeah, because I mean, that's one thing that I keep telling myself, content marketing has to be like, it fits our price point, our skill set, all that. And that's one thing that just I've never really been able to prove a connection between writing content and getting customers in a meaningful way.
Yeah, I mean, we're investing in it right now, but I think that my basic understanding from what I can gather from some folks is really most of it happens at like bottom of the funnel intent. You know, so you want to like optimize your product pages and things like that, but you're probably not, that's going to be super competitive, hard to get links pointing to your product pages. So the next best thing is to write articles that are like comparing tools, including yours. I'm like torn on this. Like, I don't want to publish articles that list my competitors, you know?
Right. Well, especially because you're kind of in a new space. Like, we're on opposite ends of the spectrum where with us, when someone comes to us, we don't need to tell them what a CRM is. We don't need to pitch them on the value that they already know. With you, you're kind of saying like, hey, here's this new thing that maybe you've never heard of before, which, yeah, it's talking about competition and stuff like that. Like, that's how we were in the early days. We got a lot of customers because they didn't know about other options, if I'm being honest.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of that. It was in my previous businesses. Like, they just weren't aware of the competitors. And I think that with content, like, the one thing that I've started to really separate now is investing in article writing content versus investing in audience or brand. Like, those are completely different things now. I think a few years ago, people used to think of them as the same, but I think they're very different now.
Well, and like, what is the difference in your mind between SEO and content marketing?
Well, content marketing could be pretty broad, but when I think of SEO, we're going to be creating content that's like text-based, you know, articles, essentially. But SEO also includes optimizing your homepage and your product information pages and your comparison pages, right? Like, there's SEO in that too.
I was reading the book Traction by Gabriel Weinberg, not the Traction everyone thinks of, but the other book called Traction. It differentiates between the two, and kind of the impression I get by the book's definition is that like content marketing is meant to be enjoyed by people, and like it succeeds by, you know, people might share it or whatever, whereas SEO is like meant to be enjoyed by Google's algorithm, basically. And not that they're mutually exclusive, but like it is kind of a different approach, I think.
Yeah, I think that content is also pretty broad, and it could include written articles. In terms of just written articles, I think of some that are like bottom of funnel, like you're about to buy a tool like this. Here's an article about buying tools like this. And then there's more top of funnel, which is like how to run a sales team because you're a sales manager. And maybe there's some SEO juice for that. That's not necessarily buying intent. But then there's like another class of content that's like, I think more like thought pieces. It doesn't matter at all about the SEO value of this. It's just interesting, or it's like taking a stance on something. And yeah, and that,
and that's, I think, more the audience side you were talking about.
That's more on the audience, and even content marketing too. It's like meant to be shared or meant to convince your people of something, you know?
Yeah. You said like you're making a big difference between audience building and like, I forget what the other one is, like getting conversions or something like that. What are you focusing on?
I think of it as like there's like audience and brand stuff, and that could be a number of different projects. And then there's just pure SEO driven article development.
Right. Okay. But you said you're doing content stuff now. Are you doing both of those? Or are you focusing on one or the other?
Both. Yeah. The SEO article stuff is like up and running. I have a writer, a separate like SEO keyword strategist who he just researches keywords and creates briefs that we then hand to the writer. And then I have a marketing coordinator sort of manages that, but then she's also involved in the audience brands. I'm curious to ask you about that actually. So like with over the years, right? Because you have a team of like, what's your team size now?
19 people now.
19. So when it comes to hiring people to work on marketing stuff, what's been your approach to that? Like, were you, or are you ever like, you're going to be hands-on in it, or I'm going to hire like a head of marketing to figure it out and run with it, or outsource to an agency? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I'm happy to share, but let me preface this by saying like, this is my greatest weakness, or like the thing that we've probably done worse, just a terrible job at. In the early days, like I did most of the marketing for a long time myself. My brother, who's the other co-founder, did some as well. One of my weaknesses is outsourcing. I'm just like terrible at quick transactional relationships. So I've basically never effectively hired anyone that's not a full-time employee, which is, I think, the opposite of most people in our space. The good side of this is like, I think we've got a really good culture and all this, but the bad side is like, I've never been in a situation where it's like, oh, we need some quick copywriting. Let me pay someone for $20 to do some copywriting. I just would do it myself, and I'm okay at it, but I'm not an expert at any of this stuff. We didn't have a real marketing person until 2 years ago.
Like no person who was working on any sort of marketing?
The biggest team of the company is CRM coaches, which is basically customer service. They get 20% time. So 1 day a week, they can do other stuff. So we've had a lot of CRM coaches, like enjoying writing is a common characteristic of people who like customer service. So a lot of them have chosen to write help articles, to write blog posts, to create content like that.
I like that model of content marketing, essentially, right? Like having your subject matter experts create some content.
The problem is we're not subject matter experts. Like, you know, Close, the CRM with Stelly's. So Stelly is like this uber sales guy, right? He knows everything about sales. And that's like CRMs are consumed by salespeople. I look at his content. I'm like, wow, I wish anyone at Less Annoying CRM had that kind of understanding of how, like, we have no salespeople. None of us have ever done sales before. We're selling to salespeople. We're experts on how to build software and how to provide customer service, which is not what our customers want to know. I agree with you. That would be a great model. But this is one of our great struggles is we can write interesting content, but it is interesting to people who would never use Less Annoying CRM.
It just made me think of like my friend Brad Tunar, who ran Delicious Brains. He just recently sold it. It's like a big, it's a software dev shop and they make developer tools, right? So all of their tools are very, very technical, only for developers. One of the things that they've had success with is having their in-house software developers write technical articles. They're too technical to be able to outsource content.
That's great.
And that's been working well for them. I hear you. Like, you guys are basically like a software shop first. You're not like a sales team first.
Right. There's like that classic co-founder pair of like, you know, this person was a travel agent and this person builds software and now they can build really good software for travel agents. We don't have that domain expert at all, really. I'm curious how you're, because, you know, you're doing this pivot to coaches and consultants. I think you're probably closer to that world than I am to the world of sales, but like you're not a deep domain expert in that, right?
Yeah, no, I'm not. And this is one of the things that made me a little bit nervous about starting to focus on coaches because probably for the first time, although I use ZipMessage every single day, I'm a user of it. You know, we're finding that our best customers are coaches, but I don't identify as a coach and I never really have. I've dabbled in it a couple of years ago when I was doing productized stuff, but like never as like a real business thing. And I don't do any of it today. So this is definitely the first time where we're doing marketing things, speaking to people who are not like me. So I have a little bit of a harder time writing an article or an email knowing that it's going to resonate because I can't put myself in their shoes necessarily, you know. But I would say that one of the other reasons I'm excited about going after coaches here is because it is one of those verticals that is pretty broad and it's not impossible to like outsource writing on topics. And I feel like everyone has some sort of experience with coaches, even me like dabbling in it. But like Claire, our new marketing coordinator, like she does coaching on the side too. And she's well connected to many other coaches. She's in other communities. So that sort of helps. Even our writer, Kat, like she's not necessarily a full-time coach, but she's familiar with it, familiar with the territory. And I mean, the subject matter, we've done a ton of interviews, so we really have a lot of like voice of customer data and like actual stories from actual coaches that we pull from. But the things that they're talking about are not like super technical. Like we're not speaking to developers, we're not speaking to doctors or lawyers where we have to have like really technical industry accuracy, right? We're basically talking about business topics in the context of building a coaching business, you know? So like, I guess like what we're doing is from a SEO article standpoint, we're doing a mix of bottom of funnel, like you're shopping for tools to run your coaching business. We're in the mix there. We have articles about that. And then we have more top of funnel articles that are more about like how to start a coaching business, how to grow a coaching business, how to do group coaching, like things like that. And then on the content side, and we're just getting started with this right now, we're going to soon be launching like a community for coaches, like a private.
That's been my dream for a long time.
I mean, I think that's another interesting area with marketing. I think this is one of the things today that is really hard to pull off and do well, and it won't happen quickly. It'll definitely be a long-term play. But if you can get this right, that like this community thing, some form of community, that's like the most effective. If pay-per-click ads are way too expensive, like a non-starter these days, and even content marketing and SEO is just extremely competitive, and Google is showing half the front page of just ads anyway. Building a community with your ideal customers, like that, to me, I'm thinking of that as like a product in itself. Like give them an experience that's great. Hey, real quick. This podcast is sponsored by Instrumental Products. That's my product studio, where I and my small crew, we take new product ideas from concept to launched. I'm a full stack product designer and developer, and I love collaborating with fellow founders, creators, and SaaS companies to bring that spark of energy into new product ideas. Think of Instrumental Products as your shortcut to shipping that next idea and getting it into the hands of your customers as efficiently as possible. Got something to ship? Let's talk. Visit instrumentalproducts.com to learn more.
It's word of mouth on steroids. Like everybody wants word of mouth. And I hear a lot of people say, oh, you know, that's not even a real channel. Don't call it that. I think it is. And I think like Less Annoying gets most of our customers from that. But once in our past, there was a Facebook group created by one of our customers who was a travel agent. So it was like Less Annoying CRM for travel agents was the group. And it got a few hundred members. And like, again, we didn't even create it, but they invited me and I joined it. And like once a month, I would go in and answer a question in there. And it kept growing and growing and all this great goodwill would build up and someone would post a question and it'd be half about the CRM, but half about how to use it as a travel agent. I'd be like, I didn't even know travel agents still existed until 6 months ago. I don't know the answer to this, but someone else would go in and answer the question for me. And if you could do that, but instead of it being this weird tiny niche of your customers, be the main core group, that would be huge.
Yeah. And I mean, think about all the different communities and whether it's like Facebook groups or Slack groups or other places online where people are like, hey, what do you all use for your CRM for your business? And then there's a thread and hopefully you are mentioned in there, probably alongside all of your competitors. But I'm sure, like, how many customers have you gotten just from someone in a comment thread in a community somewhere answering the question of, like, which CRM does everybody here use, right?
Yeah, probably a bunch. We were dabbling with doing a community, but A, I keep getting scared off by, like, moderation, and, like, it's just a big responsibility. But B, our problem is we're not as niche. Like, we haven't found an industry or some other niche the way you have, so we're, like, for small businesses. And, like, we did a little dipping our toe in the water, and we were like, that's not actually a community. Like, coaches, that's a community. Small businesses is not. No one, like, thinks of themselves as a small business owner. They think of themselves as a coach or a travel agent or an insurance agent or whatever. So that's why we haven't.
We're still in the process of dipping our toes in the water here and, like, starting to niche down and even starting to do this community thing. So I have no idea if it would be the right strategy or even if we'll be successful with executing it. But it is hard, you know, because moderating is one thing, but I think just making it good, you know, because, like, it can't just be, we're this product company and come join our community all about our own product. It's got to be, like, actually valuable, which means you need to basically hire at least one person to be the one to really drive the energy and, like, talk to people every day and run many workshops in the community and keep them engaged and all this different stuff. So,
yeah. I feel like most marketing attempts in my experience that have failed, like, at the end of the day, you could look back on it and it's exactly the problem you just said. It's like, we put effort into it. We tried to make it good, but we were doing what we wanted. We weren't giving anyone anything they wanted. And it really sucks when you have to market your marketing. Like, you make an ebook and then you're like, okay, now I have to, okay, how does anyone hear about this ebook? And it's like, if they're not already looking for it, like, this is Justin Jackson's whole thing about, like, riding an existing wave, right? If you're putting something out there, even if it's good, but if nobody wants it, now you've got a second marketing challenge of getting people to the top of your main marketing funnel.
Yep. I was going to, like, send you a private ZM about this. I don't know if you're open to talking about this kind of, like, future marketing ideas for mm-hmm. less annoying, sure. But, like, you know, I was hearing you talk about it on your podcast the other day and, like, trying to sort of brainstorm new channels that you can unlock. I'm sure you're probably already thinking about this because you're what, over 10 years in now on this business, right? Mm-hmm. We talked about how you have the less annoying CRM brand so well. Like, have you thought about just firing up new product?
Yes. We have a few misadventures in this in the past.
Like less annoying invoicing and less annoying whatever
yeah.
else.
So our name as a company is actually Less Annoying Software LLC because this has been kind of the idea. Like, no one grows up and dreams of starting a CRM company. Like, it's a pretty boring thing to to make. But the idea was like, what is the core thing that everything else would build off of? And so, yeah, that has been the plan. And every once in a while, we start going down that path. And then coincidentally, the main business, like, starts doing better. And we're like, it's hard to justify putting resources into this side thing when, you know, you could put the same resources into, like, you've just got a lot more leverage focusing, I think. But I'm conflicted about that.
Well, one argument to make for it, I think, is that you already have a huge customer base and an even larger audience, like email list, right? Or at least people who have tried it in the past, maybe didn't fully convert, but then you still have all these paying customers, right? So you instantly have an audience. Like, whatever new product you launch, as long as it's in the same set of needs, you can instantly launch to over 10K MRR, right? Like, within a few weeks of launching it. You're at a huge head start against every other new SaaS startup.
Yeah. So how do you decide whether to build it as a new product versus build it into the existing one is one question I've struggled with. What you're saying makes absolute sense from, like, a revenue standpoint. Like, if we build it into our existing product, then it's like providing value to people and it gets a lot of usage, but you don't make any money off of it.
Yeah. It sort of depends on what kind of product it is. I would think that the breakdown there would be it goes in and we're about to build a bunch of new features, which maybe should be their own product, but I don't know. But the breakdown I would think is, like, if it's still in CRM land, but just bigger, more powerful CRM land, or maybe like a super automated CRM, like that's like a new, more expensive plan on the existing product. But if it's an adjacent product that, like, some customers might find valuable and use and other customers might not be interested at all, spin off a separate product. But I really do think that, like, you also have the branding advantage too. Like, you could literally call your line of products, like, less annoying this, less annoying that, you know?
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. So sometimes I like feel this weird FOMO about like when you listen to true impressive entrepreneurs on podcasts or follow them on Twitter or whatever, and they're like, well, all I did was I took out a $5 million loan somehow and hired a bunch of people and like super leveraged myself and built it very quickly. Every once in a while, I'm like, I should do that. Like, yeah, we've got this equity. We could leverage it and we could grow faster and do more. And then I'm also like, oh man, it's hard enough doing one thing.
Yeah. For me, like sitting here with just a tiny team, and I'm always like struggling to figure out like which resources I'm going to put on which things and which things can we not do because we don't have the resources right now. You know, I always look at these other companies and friends companies that have teams, you know, that have really built out. And I'm like, oh, you can do everything. Like two of your employees over on.
Nope. Well, like, actually, you might be right. Like, if we were starting a brand new greenfield project, I guess we could probably move roughly as quick. I mean, you never move as fast as the founder does. Like, no employee ever moves as fast as the founder because, like, they're not going to put in nights and weekends and all that stuff. We could move a lot faster if we did that. The thing that I didn't appreciate until we got bigger is just how slow everything moves on the main business now. Because we've got 5 software engineers and 2 DevOps engineers, and we're shipping stuff faster than we ever have before, but like our NPS score is actually dropping right now, which suggests to me that the competition is moving faster than us. And it's hard to justify slowing down the pace that we're trying to improve our current product.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I think you're right, but also it's a tough set of trade-offs.
I'm curious about this because, again, like at several million ARR, you're at a very different landscape than what I'm looking at. You know, I'm still in total like startup land here. And so like, yeah, like what metrics are you generally looking at in terms of like deciding where to focus the energy? It sounds like, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. It sounds like lately you've been thinking about we need to find some new marketing channels, right? So like, what is it about, what like metrics or numbers are you looking at that tells you like, well, that's the thing to focus on instead of reducing churn or whatever else it might be?
Yeah. So we looked at this and basically, you know, we've got whatever amount of traffic hits our website. And like, who could say, is it a lot or a little? I don't know. Like in a vacuum, it's hard to say. We looked at, okay, how many of those people sign up for free trials? Key thing here, you got to filter out people who are going to your site to log in. When we looked at it, 90% of our traffic to our homepage is current customers going to log in. So it looks like we had a really low conversion rate. And we kept A/B testing everything and we couldn't get it to go up. And then we realized 90% are already customers when you filter those out.
Yeah,
we
actually have a really tricky thing for ZipMessage too, because we use our own domain for the whole app, including our marketing site. And so like, I actually have like different versions of analytics installed with code built in to see A, if they're logged in, but then we also have ZipMessage conversations that can be shared publicly.
Right. So
how you don't have to be logged in to just be looking at somebody's conversation. And so we like filter we have like a different view just to filter that stuff out.
Yeah. Well, and then also like, let's say so our most successful blog post ever was my brother, who's he's basically has a PhD in data science, more or less. And he wrote this post about like baseball statistics, like advanced sabermetric stuff. It has nothing to do with Less Wing CRM, but he wrote it. He wanted a place to publish it. So he put it on our blog, like 11 years ago.
Like it's a ton.
And it got a ton of traffic. You shouldn't like beat yourself up over having a bad conversion rate because people looking at sabermetrics blog posts aren't signing up for the CRM afterwards.
Well, I mean, now you guys have to go build a sabermetrics SaaS app.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the less annoying baseball statistics.
Yeah, there you go.
But anyway, so we try to filter out like who are the actual people who are potentially might sign up for a free trial, what percentage of them convert. And I tried to compare those to industry benchmarks, and who knows what, I think we're at 1.5% conversion, and I don't know, is that good or bad, but I think that's okay. It's not great. That gets them to a free trial. This is where our numbers all get good. So 25%-ish of free trial accounts pay, which for a no credit card trial, it's not like the best in the world, but it's, I think, pretty strong. And then if someone comes back a second time after signing up for the free trial, that number jumps to like 70 or 80%. So they're either dropping off immediately or they're going to pay us. So, and then if you look at our churn, it's 1.5% per month or something like that, which more than half of our accounts are single users paying us $15. So pretty low value. 1.5% churn is pretty good for that type of customer. So we looked at all of this and we basically said, if someone comes back to our site a second time, they're going to pay us and they're not going to churn at a high rate. So we're just like, yeah, we could optimize that, but like, that's not what we're going to worry about. Getting people to come back a second time after they sign up for the free trial is like one of our top priorities. And then the second one is just more traffic, because I think all our other numbers look okay.
Do you do any sort of sales, like phone sales or whatever?
Historically, very little. What we do is we buy, it's called PPL, pay per lead, where you kind of buy a lead that's, there are all these websites out there that say like, we'll help you pick the best CRM. And then people go to those websites, give them their contact info, talk to them, and then they basically sell that lead to people. It sounds real slimy, but actually we've found you can get some pretty qualified leads that way. Even with them being that qualified, it's like arguably not worth the time, because again, our average deal size is so small. But that's the only way we've really gotten it to work. We don't do any like outbound sales or kind of cold outreach to anybody.
Right, right. It's so hard, man. Because it's like tracking it, just getting visibility. Like we were talking about the logged in user versus not logged in, but even anything else, like it takes so long. The thing that really kind of pisses me off about all the marketing advice out there is like, oh, just do this or just test this. People always say like, well, just test this. Testing this means probably hiring someone. And if you're not hiring someone, then you are stopping everything else you were doing and you're going to work full time on this little idea. And it's not going to take a day. It's going to take a month just to launch it. And then you're going to need 3, 5, 6 months before you even know, is there meaningful data coming from this channel? I think there's no version of like, do just enough to test it to know if it's worth investing in. I think you just need to strategize and pick a couple of big channels and take like huge bets, like spend half your year on these bets.
I 100% agree. I used to like really buy into the data-driven mindset. And like when it works, great. Like when something's easy to measure and it's very quantifiable, fantastic. But I keep looking at my business and saying we're at 3.5 million ARR and I can't really point at a single marketing success. If you follow the data, we aren't a $3.5 million business. Like what happened? Where's the disconnect? And the disconnect is like a lot of stuff's hard to track. Like it's so hard to attribute because you do something over here and then 18 months later, someone who saw that comes and signs up and how could you ever know? So yeah, I agree with you. You just have to kind of have a hypothesis and commit to it longer than it probably makes sense to sometimes.
Yeah. And then I think the other thing, and it's like, again, we're like product people. So it's so the opposite of like, okay, these are the specs for a new feature. We're going to build it. We're going to test it. It's going to pass these tests. We're going to deploy it. And then green light, like it works. Great. With marketing, it's like you do all that work and then it's like, maybe this might work someday. I don't know. Like,
yeah. And the competitive side of it, like I could write a really great blog post and HubSpot has a team of 100 people writing blog posts. Like my great blog post on page 5 of the Google search isn't going to do anything. Whereas, yeah, back to the product thing. It's been years since I've built something and not been 100% confident it would provide a lot of value to customers. It's pretty easy to de-risk that, especially as you get more mature and you get a lot of customer feedback. But with marketing, it's like, who knows? I kind of hate it.
And, you know, and then there's this other thing that like, as product people, at least for me, like I start to feel this like guilt around like, oh, maybe if we just build these features or start to build for these customers, we'll do better. And I'm hearing, in, at least in my head, like all the marketing people on Twitter are saying like, oh, don't just build features. You have to market. You have to, you're not working on marketing. It's like, well,
yeah,
I think I am.
I hear that voice. It's like a pendulum though, where you probably want to be in the middle. And like right now, all the conventional wisdom is like too far on the marketing side, I think, because it used to be too far on the product side, where like a lot of people would have you think the product doesn't matter. You're wasting your time if you're building a product. I tried this once in my life where I kept hearing this advice, like, just like come up with an idea for a product, build like not even an MVP, just like maybe a prototype or maybe not even that, just mockups or whatever, and then go sell it. And after like 5 or 10 people pay for it, then go build it. No one buys software like that.
Yeah. I mean, it's so competitive on the product side now because it's like you not only have to solve a micro problem, you have to solve a whole problem. Like there's so many table stakes features in every category that if you don't have these things, you're just a non-starter, even if you do one thing better than the competitors. And then the quality, like if it's clunky, again, like that alone, it would definitely turn me off from a product. And I know many customers are looking at that, you know.
the standards are so much higher. I wouldn't use my product today, if I'm being honest. Like, I will in 3 months after we launch this redesign. I would sign up for it and take a look at it and be like, ugh, absolutely not. And that's not through lack of trying. It's just hard. Like, you know, you get bigger. It's hard to just change is harder. Everything you change, you have to be like, okay, there's 25,000 people I might piss off with this. Got to be very careful about it.
Well, if folks take anything away from this podcast, I guess it's marketing and growth is just hard.
Yeah.
That's all we got.
Good luck.
That does it for today's episode of the Full Stack Founder Podcast. As always, the show notes include links to the YouTube channel for this podcast, where you can catch these full interviews on video, and my YouTube channel. That's where I'm building products in public. See you next week.